Well, for more, let's bring in Jagruthi Dave covering these developments for CNE in Washington, D.C. Well, Jagruthi, you know, President Donald Trump calling for a regime change in Iran now that the Iranian supreme leader is dead. How far would he go to achieve his goals?
Well, President Trump has done quite a lot so far in engaging in these strikes alongside Israel in Iran without congressional approval, provoking the ire of Democrats and many Republicans. He has said in that Truth Social post that the heavy and pinpoint bombing will continue uninterrupted throughout the week or as long as necessary to achieve our objective of peace throughout the Middle East and indeed the world. So they're reiterating the point that he made in that 8-minute video announcing the launches, that these action was not just about denuclearizing Iran, but it was about more maximalist goals, which was to achieve regime change, to topple the Iranian leadership. And he called on the Iranian people to overthrow their government in that 8-minute video, but also after announcing the death of Iran's supreme leader, saying that this was the greatest chance for the Iranian people to take back their country.
Well, what would it then take for a de-escalation on Washington's side?
This is really the question. It's very complicated. I think a lot of people are drawing comparisons between what the US has done in Iran and what the US has done in Venezuela and are saying the situation is far more complex. First of all, the Iranian network of leadership, it is more of a network. Decapitating the top isn't necessarily just a one and done action to affect regime change. A lot of experts believe that this is going to be potentially a protracted affair. How many days it lasts for, if it days lasts for weeks even, we're not sure. But also all of this action comes ahead of the midterms, and we've got to look domestically at what the popularity or unpopularity of such action is amongst Trump's supporters. Remember, he campaigned promising to prevent the US from engaging in foreign wars. And look where we are. The US has attacked Iran, something that the president had criticized previous US presidents for doing so. So what will the American sentiment be on this? As I mentioned, lots of criticism from Democrats and some Republicans. But of course, there are some of Donald Trump's supporters, Lindsey Graham, for example, who are celebrating this, saying that this is a great move for America's security and for freedom in Iran. So de-escalation, what are the US's goals? I think we're not really clear. He was vague in advance of this action, perhaps as a strategic move. But even now, a lot of people are saying that this is typical of Donald Trump's foreign policy, not really laying out much of the groundwork, although other people will say this is part and parcel of why the president has had successes in their views of achieving change where previous leaders have failed to do so. So again, a very complex situation. I think it all depends on what happens next. Iran, we understand, is the IRGC is promising to enact retaliation imminently. So we'll see what that happens. And it's a game changer if this spirals into a regional conflict, if Iran's retaliation involving its neighbors in the Middle East spirals into something bigger. We are looking at something bigger than a conflict between the US, Iran and Israel. It involves the region, which, as the UN Secretary General said in that emergency council meeting, is one of the most volatile regions in the world.
Well, thank you very much for sharing with us all those updates. Jagruthi Dave reporting for CNE in Washington, D.C. Now, we also have Dr. Chedomir Nesterovic, Professor Geopolitics, ESSEC Business School, Asia Pacific, with us right now as well. Dr. Chedomir, you know, with Iran's supreme leader now confirmed dead, and as our correspondent said, what's next for Iran is a big question. This shift in the strategic calculus, and does it really mark a turning point in the confrontation or even the start of a more dangerous phase?
I think that the death of the supreme leader is a very big thing concerning Iran, because, as you have indicated, there is no successor. So since there is no successor, all the cards are on the table. However, I do believe that the Revolutionary Guards, but also the government and also the parliament, will do their best in order to make some kind of successor continuation. However, it is a very big blow concerning Iran, and probably it will take a long time until we have another supreme leader.
Well, then, you know, who then now holds operational authority in the immediate term? The president, the assembly of experts, or the Revolutionary Guard?
So from the constitutional point of view, it will be the president, but also the government and the assembly of experts. But in the meantime, it will be the Revolutionary Guards, not even the army. It will be the Revolutionary Guards who will take all the responsibility. And they are also pledging the avenge of the supreme leader and also of other people who have been killed in Iran. So I do expect that the war is not finished yet. It will continue because the Revolutionary Guards are not ready to surrender, and they will fight until the end.
And President Donald Trump, you know, has framed the strikes as necessary for security, even though there was no, you know, publicly stated imminent threat to U.S. territory. And Iran also appeared strategically weakened at that time. In that context, was this a calculated power play, would you say? And how might Trump be positioning himself both domestically and also on the global stage?
Yes. So we have the domestic question, and we have the global stage. So the domestic question is that Donald Trump has been elected on, let's say, peaceful platform. Just a few months ago, he wanted to receive the Nobel Prize for Peace. So even within the MAGA movement, there are people who are surprised by this, that suddenly he decides to put the United States in war. And it is not a small country. It is Iran. So it was quite a surprise from the domestic point of view. It was also a surprise from the global point of view, because at least on the paper, Iran should have two big friends, China on one side and Russia on the other side. So far, they did not move. But let's see what will happen in the future.
Yeah. And, you know, this is now the second foreign leader that President Trump has moved aggressively against this year, the first being Venezuelan president who was captured, and now Iran's supreme leader has been killed. How should we interpret this pattern of really targeting sovereign leaders? Is this a coherent strategic doctrine, a bit to reshape global order, or really something else entirely?
Exactly, because so far we were in the domain of diplomacy, and now it is some kind of destructive diplomacy. So this destructive diplomacy says, okay, we can have negotiation. And just 2 days ago and yesterday, they were announcing the significant progress in the negotiation between the United States and Iran, and suddenly they're attacking Iran. So it means also that Trump is continuing with his policy of shock and awe, meaning that people don't know how he is going to react. But this time, it's a big country, and this time it is not like in Venezuela. So we have the Revolutionary Guards. So it will not be as easy as it was in Venezuela.
Mm. And if Tehran believes that this was a U.S.-backed decapitation attempt, does that increase the likelihood of, you know, retaliation beyond direct strikes, including cyber operations or attacks on energy infrastructure?
We can imagine a lot of things, meaning even the attacks on the American soil. If, for instance, we have some sleeping cells in the United States, they can be activated in order to do something there. So hopefully this will not happen. But in the neighborhood, they have all these American troops. So there's American troops, especially in countries where you have a significant Shia population, such as in Bahrain. This is quite a dangerous situation for the American troops, because it is not necessarily that the threat is coming from Iran. The threat can come also from inside the countries.
Well, let's also pivot to the energy markets. You know, how vulnerable is global oil supply right now, particularly transit through the Strait of Hormuz, and how quickly could prices, you know, react?
Absolutely. We have two things here. The first one is the supply by Iran. So there are countries, for instance, China, about 15% of the Chinese imported oil is coming from Iran. So now they have to recalibrate, they have to pivot to some other countries if it is impossible to buy from Iran anymore. And the second thing is the Strait of Hormuz. And the Strait of Hormuz, about 30 to 40% of all oil is transiting through the Strait of Hormuz. If the Strait of Hormuz is closed, it will immediately have an effect on sending prices. And these prices will hit very much, emerging countries. Mm-hmm. So the emerging countries, especially in Asia, and we have them in Southeast Asia, who also depend on the oil coming from the Middle East, if the price is going up, automatically it will have some kind of influence on their own growth. And we cannot expect the very high growth that we used to have in Southeast Asia if the Strait of Hormuz is closed.
And, you know, my last question to you would be, you know, for trade-dependent economies in Southeast Asia, including Singapore, what are the most immediate risks? You know, we're looking at energy costs, inflation, financial volatility, where really powers position themselves.
So for the countries in Southeast Asia, in the past, we used to say that diversification in terms of sources of oil or the sources of energy is something which is good. And now we realize that it is something which is compulsory. So it means we cannot continue as usual. We must diversify in order to be sure that we don't depend on a single country or on a couple of countries, or in that case, on the Strait of Hormuz, in order to receive oil. So you have to think at other possibilities that exist. And in that case, it will be either Africa or it will be either some other places, but we cannot continue like that. Now, concerning Singapore, Singapore is a small country. So in that case, the demand for oil is not very big, but Singapore is also a place of refineries. So for these refineries, when you produce something else out of crude oil, this is having an impact, definitely.